Okay, world. Rusia, I see you got that all fixed up. Amazing. Okay. It was difficult getting started the past few days, you know. Okay, Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh is daf Kuf Chof Gimel. And we're holding at the Halakha Mishnah. So we're moving on. We've discussed the inyanim at the beginning of the perek about what is considered to be some of the issues of yad that would be nogea, even a nevela, shomer, the differences between the tumah chamura and tumah kala in the halachas of yad v'shomer, what kind of things would be mitztaref because of their edibility, not because of their ability to handle as a yad or a shomer. And now we get into an interesting machlokas here about how to understand. We're going to get to that machlokas only when we try to understand the Mishnah. But how do we understand the nature of the yad if you're talking about a yad to one thing which is connected to another thing? Now, it turns out that if you need to do the skinning of an animal, so you will appreciate the fact that you're going to be trying to hold on to the most convenient place in order to pull that skin off. It's very difficult, and you want to get a good grip. And therefore, the question of that grip is a grip to the skin, but is it also considered to be a yad to the basar itself that's underneath the skin? That is a little bit of an issue between Ta'amurayim, as we'll see in the Gemara, and how to understand the Mishnah. But understanding the Mishnah, the pashtus is, we won't get into those details, and we'll just look at the question of how much of that skin would you need to hold on to in order to get a good grip on it and be able to pull. So the truth is, remember that even though or itself is not considered to be a foodstuff, but we had the halacha, it's definitely a shomer. If there's a piece of meat on the other side of the skin, we had that all the way up by the first Mishnah, right afterwards in the Gemara. So if there's a piece of meat on the other side of the skin, then that skin is a shomer to that piece of meat. We even had the discussion, we had three different versions of it, about what the din would be about a hair that was actually above a piece of meat. And here the question is, the skin itself, as you're trying to do the actual skinning, the flaying of the skin, what is considered to be a yad to it, and what is considered to be a yad from it to the basar? So someone who is being mafshit, there's different ways to be mafshit depending on what your ultimate goal is in the usage of the skin. So you can have a lion skin rug. You know, you could do that. You can have a sheepskin rug. If you're going to make something that's a flat surface, so then what you need to do is the classic skinning. So the classic skinning actually slits down the skin so that it can be spread out from head to toe, so to speak. So from the front of the animal all the way to the hindquarters, you make a slice down across the area of the stomach, through over across the breast, down the stomach, and all the way down to the back of the animal. And then you pull from either side to pull off the skin. But there's other usages for skin. And of course, in those days, one of the most important usages for skin was to make a watertight leather bottle. If you're going to be making a watertight leather bottle, you want as little disturbance of the full surface of the leather as possible. And therefore, what you would do is you would make use of the natural shape of the skin, which is like a bottle. So if you would actually pull the skin down from the neck and pull it down, which is, of course, much more difficult, but still, that is a common way of making a closed container that then only has to be sealed at the bottom, and it's actually a flask, a large flask, depending on the size of the animal. You could also, if you're really interested in having a small opening to a flask that is almost completely shut, you could be margil. Margil means that the animal is actually flayed from this, the next to the leg up. That's called margil. And so you bring the skin up, very difficult to do, and you have to get it across the chazeh, which is where it's tight, and then up to the neck. Now, at the neck, we're going to see that what generally happens, the skin around the neck is loose. And once you've got it up to the neck, the question is that part considered to be really part of the skinning or not? That's going to be a machlokas that we'll see very soon, because obviously the neck is sort of just fluffy and can fall off. The skin around the neck can fall off by itself. So let's take a look at these different ways of skinning and what the shiur would be of how much of an area you need to be able to hold on tight to the skin. So hamafshit bivehemah v'chaya, if you're doing a skinning of a behemah or a chaya, and it doesn't make any difference whether the animal is an animal that is tahor or an animal that is tmi'ah. Now, of course, the thing is that if the animal is tmi'ah, so then obviously if it's dead, it is an avela. And if that's the case, then we're talking about the skin as a yad to be metame the adam. So that's talking about a direction from the animal to the adam. If we're talking about a tahorah, then it's food stuff. And there we would be talking about being metame from the adam through the yad into the food stuff, which would be the meat of the animal. So basically, this is a shortcut way of telling us the direction that the tumor will be moving along the conductor. So it doesn't matter, therefore, if it's Torah or Tmi'ah, it makes no difference whether we're talking about large or small animals. So if you're talking about a cow or you're talking about a sheep, it depends actually what your purpose is for the use of the skin. So if you need it for something that is shatuach, so shatiach, obviously nowadays the word shatiach has become limited to an actual rug. It would be a lion skin rug, or over here, a rug of a sheep. But the word shatiach simply means, in its origins, it means something that is shatuach, something that's flat. So that could mean for a tablecloth, which is shatuach. Could also obviously mean for a rug. Could mean for a beach cover. But anything that's flat. So then what you want to do is you want to make it as flat as possible by slitting down across the belly and then pulling on either side. So then the shiur that would be useful is kidei achiza. Now, we weren't going to discuss what exactly is meant for that, but whatever is necessary to hold that skin tightly in order to be able to apply force and pull, all of that is a yad. But once it gets larger than that, it's no longer a useful yad. It's too far away. And at that point, it ceases to be a yad. Now, we'll see what happens afterwards, what is considered to be the yad. So that would be kidei achiza. Now, if you're making a chemet, which means you want it to be closed, and then what you're going to do is the easiest way, if you're not being margil, is you don't want to rip it, so you start at the neck, and then you work your way down, which is much more difficult to do, but it remains whole. So over there, you need to be able, because of the difficulty in getting across the chazet, in getting across the breast, you need to be able to pull on that until it gets all the way past the breast, because there you actually use the weight of the skin that you had up until that point. And you also need to be able to put a lot of pressure on it in order to be able to pull it. So there, you will continue to grab whatever is already pulled out. The whole thing is considered to be a yad. But once you get across the chazeh, at that point, it goes very easily. Even the weight of the skin itself can pull off the rest. And because of that, it's no longer considered to be a useful yad after it gets from the chazet. But if you're starting from the raglayim, and that's called hamargil, and this is also a way to make a more compact chemet, so that it has a smaller opening. So there, all of it, because it's very difficult and you need the weight of the skin the whole time, which you lean against the pull, kulo chibur letum'ah, all of the part that has been pulled off is still considered to be connected, and it's all considered to be a yad. And this is for what purposes? Litame, litame. As we indicated in the opening of the Mishnah, if it's a nevela, so then it would be mitame. If it's kosher, it would be lehitame, which is litame, the equivalent of lehitame, to allow it to become tame. So whether it's talking about making the animal tame because it's kosher, or whether it's talking about the guy who's doing the work making him tame because it's an avela, that would be the shiur. Now, what about the skin that's around the neck? So even though we said kulo, kulo doesn't necessarily mean kulo to the last point. Kulo means whatever part is necessary for the skinning, the main skinning. But what about the part on the neck if you're being margil? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says that part is no longer considered to be a yad because it just falls off by itself. It's very loosely connected. The Chachamim Amrin, no, as long as it is connected, it's considered to be a chibur ad shiavshit et kulo. So now, what is the din? I mean, are you not going to use the skin at all to pull it? I don't understand. You said only up to kedei achiza. After that, it's no longer considered to be a yad. But what part is considered to be a yad? I mean, what's the din? None of it is a yad? So mikan ve'elech mai. After it's already beyond a point where you have kedei achiza, Omar Rav, from that point on, anything that you're pulling out is not going to be a real yad, because according to Rav, the issue over here, he holds that be'etzem, something that is a yad to the skin, is not a yad to the basar. So we've been assuming all along that when we're talking about a yad, we're talking about being metame the meat. Rav says, look, the early part, where over there you can handle the entire body and bring it from one place to another, if necessary. You could pull it by that first area of kedei achiza. But after that, there's no point in pulling it. You're already well along. And all that you're able to do is pull off the skin from that point on. Well, how does that make it a yad to the basar at all? And therefore, anything after that is considered to be tahor completely. Rav Asi says, no, that's not the issue. It's considered to be a yad, but only the part that you need in order to be able to pull in. So from that point on, after the first tefach, only the tefach that is right up against the actual meat of the animal, that's the part that you're going to be holding in order to pull, that will actually be metame, because that is a good yad. But anything further out is not. Ask the Gemara, how could Rav Asi say that anything that is within a tefach to the basar is something that you'll pull in and is a yad, if a braita says beferish not like that? Meisve. Hamafshit kashiyuraze. Once you've gotten to the point of kedei achiza, from that point forward, hanogea b'mufshat tahor. If you touch the skin that has already been skinned, it's not going to act as a tahor at all. Now, that seems to be saying, from that point on, no matter how close you get to the skin, to the actual point of contact of the skin and the flesh, right? So, my lava filu b'tefach ha'somach l'basar. It doesn't give us any shear that there's an area that then it starts acting as a yad again, does it? So that's not like Rav Asi. And of course, Rav Asi will say, well, what kind of proof against me is that? It doesn't say the whole thing. It means from that point on, excluding an area that's the tefach ha'somach l'basar, which over there, like I say, that part for sure is going to be useful for pulling off the skin. Okay. Let's take a look at another braisa that seems to say, like Rav and not like you, it says, Toshma, bo'or shekineged habasar, tameh. Only the skin which has a piece of meat on the other side, that part is tameh. Well, of course, we read that all the way back at the beginning of the parak at the first Mishnah. That's not because of Yad, that's because of Shomer. So it seems to be saying that there's no din of yad, and the only way that we're going to actually have tumah is if there's a piece of meat that's on the other side of the skin that you're touching, or shekineged habasar tameh, because of shomer. But tefar samuch lebasar, which would be tameh only if you agree that it's a yad, that would be tahor. It's exactly what Rav said, 100% against Rav Asi shita, right? Nah, says Rav Asi, you know what it might mean? Maybe the Tana is referring to or kineged habasar. He means to include even the tefach that is up close to it. And he's not talking about a shomer. He's talking about a yad. And he's calling it an orsha kineged habasar because it's right up close to the meat. But it doesn't mean what you thought. It's not the equivalent of that braita that we had at the beginning of the perek right after the Mishnah. He's calling kol tefach ha-samuch lebasar. That is what he's referring to as orsha kineged habasar. Okay. You can believe it if you want. Let's see if we have a proof from another braita. Tashma. Hamafshit bivei mal v'chaya b'torah b'tmeya b'daka u'gasa. So far, we're basically repeating our Mishnah. If you want to do it for a shatiach, so then it's k'deach izah. Now, here's the important point. V'tefach asomach l'basar tahar. Ha-ha-ha. Here it says b'feirush, without any possible explaining this away. It says the tefach, which is next to the skin, is also tahar. Exactly what Rav Asi said is not the case, all right? So this is 100%. How are you going to get out of this one? Well, I can get out of this one too, says Rav Asi. How am I going to get out of this one? Because ocha b'maya skinan, b'tefach rishon, even I admit that you need to have more than that first kidei achiza. Here's how it goes. You get kidei achiza, right? Now you're too far away from the actual body to be able to pull on comfortably. But because you've got this big piece of skin hanging there, it's very inconvenient to grab the next piece. So the next tefach doesn't count. And that is just left. And all you do is you take the knife and you use the knife to flay directly against the meat. But then when you've got the whole first part is basically folded over, and then you have a tefach, then you can start pulling again. So I agree that the first tefach following the kidei achiza doesn't count. That's what it's referring to. Okay. So we have not been able to prove from the Braitot, either Rav or Ravas. Tana. So what do we mean when we say kidei achiza? Kama kidei achiza, a tefach. But there's another Braitot that says not a tefach. It says tefachayim. Yes, is Abaya. That's not a question. Sometimes we refer to a tefach as a doubled over tefach. So think about this yourself. What would be your natural way of doing pulling like this? What you would do is you would double over the skin at the edge, use it to get a really solid grip, and then pull, right? So a tefach is correct. It means a tefach of pulling area. But a tefach of pulling area consists of two tefachim of skin bent over in the middle to provide you a grip. And the word tefach is often used like that in cases of grip issues. And therefore, we call it a tefach kaful. It also fits the word very well. It's not reading anything in. Now, let's take a look at the Mishnah in Kalim that we've learned. Tanan hata. So in Kalim, what we learned was that things that are kalim and were mekabel tuma, if they are wrecked, then they are tahar. So only if the kli continues to retain its original kli status. Once you tear it, if it's a beged, which is a type of kli, or break it, even if it's a kli cheres that has no tyra b'mikvah, it loses its shein kli. And even if it's usable as another kli, that's not important. What's important is that the shame kli that was mekabel tuma no longer exists because it's been torn or it's been broken. So in the Mishnah in Kalim, it talks about someone who has a talit and its tummy, and he wants to cut it, to tear it, in order to ruin it so that now he can at least use it and it won't be tummy. So the shiur is, kivan shenikra ruba, so once it's mostly torn, It's not considered to be a chibur anymore, and it's basically a ripped talit, and it's never going to be the same. Even if you sew it together, no, it's no longer the nice talit it was. It's not called a talit. It doesn't have that strength. It's just a piece of cloth. And then at that point, it loses its original tuma, which was a tuma of a talit, not a tuma of a piece of cloth. Omer of Nachman, so here is the very important halacha that we're going to quote in the name of Rav Nachman, even though Rav Nachman quotes it from Rabbi Bar Avuha. This was only said if the talit was already a tfulas yom. So what does that mean? You already had put this talis into the mikveh, and you can put a talis into a mikveh, it's not a klicheres, and it will become tahar. Well, it's talking about that the guy already put the talis into the mikveh, and then he sees that he needs to use this talit for something today before sunset, and he's unable to use it because it's still tamei, and he's going to be going around truma and whatever the case was. And he decides, well, the only way I'm going to be able to use this is if I tear it because it's still tamei because it's a tful yom. Now, the reason I say that this is only true by something that was already a tful yom is because the man has demonstrated his commitment to do whatever is necessary to get rid of the tumah of this talit. Because otherwise, only crazy people put their talit in a washing machine to save the dry cleaning. Because, man, what it looks like after it goes through the washing machine is just going to get you back to the talit store anyway. So this guy is pretty committed if he put that talit into the mikveh. Well, once he's committed, so then we trust that he's actually ready and prepared to grin and bear it, and he's going to tear most of the talit so that it will lose its tuma. But if he hasn't put it into the mikveh already, and he's trying to avoid damaging it by putting it through the washing machine, so then he's going to be tearing it and looking at it. Yeah, that looks like rove to me. Yeah, right. And he's never going to do the rove. So because of that, we make a gezeira. Listen here, buddy, it's not up to you. Either it's totally torn or it's not torn at all. Okay, so we make it hard on him. So he's got to be able to actually tear it. But if he already was tovel it, so migu de lo chasal of akula, since he has demonstrated that he's not going to be merachim on his poor talis, and he's ready to put it in the washing machine, so then that means he's ready to tear it if necessary. Lo chayis ala v'kora. However, it says Rav Nachman, if it's a talit she'inat fulat yom, then no way, we don't trust him. We make a gezeira. You have to tear the whole thing, and it doesn't help to tear rov. Why? Gezeirah d'malati l'mikra aruba. We don't believe he's going to really do the rov. He's going to think it's the rov and rationalize that it's the rov, and we don't trust him. Omar Rabbah, that is absolutely the wrong way to understand that Mishnah, Rav Nachman. There's two reasons why this makes no sense, okay? Let me tell you. Number one, it makes no sense because if you would tear it on that same day, Shema Yomru Tfila Bat Yuma Ola, there's a halacha that has nothing to do with whether he is going to do it, whether he really is committed. That isn't the point. The gezeira over here is because of the fact that if people see you using something that clearly had become tummy on that day, and they don't know that you actually did something to be removing the tumah, they'll think that you put it into the mikveh. And they will think that if you put it into a mikveh, you can use it on the same day, and they'll do the same thing. And that's why the chachamim were gozer, to make certain that things would not be usable if it was torn on that day. Okay? So, therefore, the whole concept isn't true. There's no way that you would be able to do a tearing on the day, which is what you're saying, on the very day that it was became tummy. And the other thing that I object to, the Od, if it's really true that the Rabbanan made a gezeira, that if you have to do the whole thing, we're worried that you won't do the whole thing, how do you explain the fact that an Olata Of, the Rebbe Lezer Rebbe Shimon, is okay. Remember, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Shita, is that the Kohen is supposed to do most of both simonim on an olat ha'of, but not the whole thing, only a rov. Why don't we make a gezerah that maybe he won't even do the rov? So, since we don't make such a gezerah, we see that Reb Nachman is wrong, and there's no such thing as our worrying that you won't do something in all the way that you need to do it. Now, this obviously doesn't mean that we should be gozer the whole thing, because you're not even allowed to do the whole thing. The lo yavdil, that's halacha d'oraisa. He's just saying that why didn't the Rabbanan make a gezerah that we need to do a rov hanikar? Okay, so we should have done that. Amalei Rav Yosef, says Rav Yosef to Rabba, this is completely off the wall. What you're saying has nothing to do with disproving Rav Nachman. Look, the first thing you said, that there's a general gezerah that things that are tamei on that day are never going to become tohor through tearing. What? Because Shema Yomu Tvila Bat Yuma Ola. Yeah, that's exactly what they're going to decide when they see that you've ripped it to shreds. That's what, oh, look, he's using the talit. Apparently he was toivel it. I mean, who's stupid enough to think that? It's clear that Korah mochiach alea. You see right away that it's torn, and therefore that, if anything, they'll conclude the exact opposite. Oh my gosh, there was no other way for him to use his talit. He had to tear it. You see, that makes no sense. And the other thing that you said is crazy. We're talking about over here in the Beit HaMikdash, on Kohanim. Have you ever seen Barnea arriving late? Have you ever seen Barnea being lazy? Kohanim are zrizimim, at least when they're in the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, if you tell him he's got to do the rov, he's going to do the rov. There's not a chance that he would rationalize less than the rov. And therefore, of course, we're not going to make a gezeira in the Beis HaMikdash. What's the Havamina? Tashma. Okay, let's take a look at our very own personal Mishnah and see whether Reb Nachman makes sense. There it says, Hamafshi b'veima uv'chaya, b'tmeya uv'torah, b'daka uv'gasa. If you're doing it for a shatiach, so then it's k'dei achiza. Okay, so what does that mean, k'dei achiza? It means that if it would be more than k'dei achiza, and you would come and touch that part, and you were tameh, and the meat was tahar, or the meat was an avela and you were tahar, it would be no problem. And you would be tahar. But why? After all, according to Reb Nachman, we don't really trust people to measure things properly. So he may say that it's k'dei achiza, but maybe it wasn't really post the shear of the k'dei achiza. And therefore, dilma lo ati lemevad ela k'dei achiza v'kanaga betuma. Maybe it wasn't beyond the shear of achiza. Maybe it was exactly the shear of achiza. And now this guy is going to be tummy, and we are going to be metayer him, huh? What do you say about that? And Reb Nachman, nobody ever suggests, my dear Reb Nachman, in the Mishnah that there's a problem. The Mishnah gives a shear of k'dei achiza, and that's all. It doesn't add k'dei achiza plus Reb Nachman's additional amount to make sure that, no, there's no such thing. Well, says Reb Nachman, if we were talking about a tuma d'oraita, we would be worried about it. But we're talking over here where it's only a tuma d'rabbanan, and therefore, if the animal is tahar, the guy who was doing the skinning, he wasn't tamei b'dioraita, he was tamei because he didn't wash his hands. All right, so whatever, right? So it's one of those, one of the yudches dvarim or something was metameim, and that's what it's talking about. Really now? Well, remember that the Mishnah spoke about either a tahar animal or a tamei animal, and that works out very well for the person who's tamei, who's taking the skin off of an animal that's tahar. But you said it's the other way around also. If the animal is tamei and is dead, it is an avela. Last I heard, the holy book says that an avela is metame. That makes him d'oraita. So what are you giving me that this is talking about a drabbanan? Tenach tamei b'tahorah, you could say it's the rabbanan. How are you going to explain the opposite case? That a Tohar person who's taking the skin off of a Tameya animal, which is dead, is a Tumah D'oraita? Because it's obviously Tumat Nevelot. So you see that even in the case of this Yad that is exactly Kedei Achiza, if it once it reaches that point, anything beyond, we're going to be betire the guy, Midiraisa, and we're not going to worry about Reb Nachman's concerns. So apparently there's no such thing. Now, when it says an animal that's tame, it does not mean an invela. What? No, it's talking about a treifa. A treifa, but a treifa that shechted is not metame. Treifa bastemuyei? I don't understand your answer. Yes? You forget Avuah d'Shmuel's halacha. Avuah d'Shmuel pointed out that a treifa that was shechted, in the event that we're talking about over here, something that is kadesh, it's mitame b'mugdoshim mid'rabbanan. And we're talking about in the Mishnah a tuma d'rabbanan of mugdoshim. Therefore, there's no reason to make a takana, says Reb Nachman. Okay, let's see whether this works. Tashma. Rabbi Dustoy ben Yehuda, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Omer, someone who is being mafshit the hide of one of the shretzim. So that is, it's very difficult to do. And they were talking about like a rodent or something. So that's difficult to do. And that is a chibur achi afshit et kulo. So this is very nogea, making those shrimals, you know. So there you have to be mafshit the whole thing, and it's considered to be. So that means the guy's got to go to the mikveh 50 times while he's making the shtrangle to make sure that it's completely tohar.
What did one mink say to the other? We should meet of Yiddish Simchis. It's a miracle.
Okay, anyway, so in this case, it's a chibur all the way until you get every last bit of that shtrangle ready. Now, but that doesn't that imply that if you're talking about, let's say, a camel, or you want to make a camel skin rug, so if it would be a gamal, so then it would not be considered to be a chibur until kulay, right? But until what point? Until kedei achiza. Ah, but according to Reb Nachman, even if you're talking about a gamal, the biggest thing that you would be making this rug out of, not just a little mink, and over there, why isn't it Batami the whole time? Because of a gezerah that maybe you didn't actually do kedei achiza and you think it's kedei achiza? So, apparently Reb Nachman is wrong. Well, maybe your implication is wrong. Maybe the point of this was not to imply that if it were a camel, then the whole thing would not be Tame. Maybe it means Lotema habegamale no chibur, but instead, ema boosha al hatzavare no chibur. But what it's making, the point is that if it were a camel, then that camel's neck skin is not considered to be a chibur. And it basically, the braita would be going like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says neck skin is not considered to be part of the necessary yad for skinning. And it'd be coming to tell me, even though that camel looks a little like Charles de Gaulle and has got this long neck stuck up in the sky, nonetheless, it is not considered to be a chibur. Omer Avuna Mishum Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yossi, speaking about the Mishnah that we had about tearing your talit, well, you should know that this was only true that if you do the rove, it's considered to be tohar. That's only if there's not enough left to be used for something else, to use as a malforet, so to use as that headgear or a nice scarf around your neck. But if there's enough left that is one solid piece that you could use as a malforet, then it remains tamei because it's still ro'ui to be a chibur, and if it's that size, even if you did the rove, that is nonetheless, midrabanan at least, is definitely considered to be choshev, and it's still a chibur, the rabbanan. Because that much the rabbanan were choshesh for Reb Nachman. Omer Ish Lakish, I want to tell you something else. That Mishnah in Kehilim was talking specifically about a talit. And a talit is not very strong. A talit actually is made out of light material. And therefore, if you do rove of it, so then it's tar. But if you were talking about a leather jacket, so a leather jacket, even if it's torn, is so strong. First of all, it holds together. You re-sew it, and it's going to be just as strong as the original because it's really tough stuff. And therefore, or this is why the tough guys, they don't wear talis, they wear leather jackets. Have you ever seen a guy wearing a talis on a motorcycle? No, it's always a leather jacket. That's because it is Gemara. And therefore, tying is Rish Lakish. You can't just tear a leather jacket and expect it to be tahar. So says Rish Lakish. Mashenken Rabbi Yochanan says, Afilu or nami lo cholim. If you tear a rove of leather, that's enough to make it tame. Not because I hold that it's not tougher, but it's no longer what it was. That's all. And because of that, the fact that you can put it back together again is not really important to me. As a matter of fact, says Rabbi Yochanan to Rish Lakish, I think I can prove my contention that the leather is not considered to be a stronger than anything else for Gabi Tuma, because remember we had another Mishnah in Kehilim all the way at the end, that if you had leather thing, a piece of leather that was actually had been used to sit on, so it became Tame Betumas Midras. And now you decide, you know what? I think we should make this into belts and make it into sandals. The moment that you take your Ismael to it, what do they call a leather cutting? It's not called a chisel, but it's not called a knife either. When you use like a sharp chisel-like affair, but for cutting leather, not for cutting wood. Does anybody know?
An awl?
An awl, I think, is generally a little thinner. But okay, in any event, the moment you took that Ismael into it and you put it to it, at that minute it becomes tar already. Because you did an act to be mevatel, and remember, tuma becomes bottle just by an act that backs up your machshava of reducing it. So even though you didn't actually make it smaller, nonetheless, it's considered to already not be the tablecloth or the shatiach that it originally was, or the chair cover that it was to be makabel midras.
Skiving knife.
What's it called?
S-K-I-V-I-N-G, a skiving knife.
Skiving.
For precise leather work.
Okay. So there.
Skiving.
There.
Skiving, not skiving.
Skiving, thank you. Kiven shenatan by Ismael Tohar, Divi Reb Yehuda. V'chachamim omrim. No, you'd have to actually make it smaller than the shear that is able to be mekabel tuma for leather. So remember, a piece of leather that's able to be mekabel tumas midras has to be the largest size of any of the types of materials, and that is 5 by 5 tefachim, very large, actually. We start with 3 by 3 fingers, etzpaot. We go to 3 by 3. We have 3 by 3 tefachim, and we get all the way up to 5 by 5 tefachim for tumas midras on leather. So you'd have to make it smaller than the shear in which it's roy to be mekabel tuma. But once you get to that below the 5 by 5 solid piece, why would it then be tahor according to everyone? Since according to Rish Lakish, the leather is tough and strong, even if it's cut and it's got a slit in it, who cares? It should be the same as if it had a 5 by 5. So therefore, the Mishnah apparently is proving that just holding something together with less than the full shear of leather is tahor. And Rish Lakish says, well, it doesn't have to be held together by the full shear. If it's held together at all, then it's strong. Yeah, but wait a minute, Rish Lakish would tell you. I mean, when do I say that it's strong? That's where, if you cut the leather straight, lengthwise, widthwise, whatever. Yes, so then the remaining piece is strong and is all considered to be one piece. We're talking about over here, we said, that you're going to be actually, you're going to be thinking of turning it into belts or turning it into shoes. I mean, the point over here is you're not cutting it straight. You're cutting it around the edges and shaping it. I never said that. Obviously, we've got little pieces. One piece is a millimeter. You know, the other piece is 3 inches. Then you bend it to make the shape. And that's not considered to be strong. I meant that if you have most of a horizontal or vertical cut that is still there, and it's all one long line, that's considered to be strong and nothing to do with this Mishnah. So, he's going around the edge. And he's not actually cutting straight across. What's it, Rabbi Yirmiyah? How about our Mishnah? You can't get a better raya than our Mishnah, says Rabbi Yirmiyah. Our Mishnah says that if you're pulling off the skin from a behema or a chayar, bitorah ubitmeyah, bidaka ugasa, if you're doing it l'shatiach, the shear is k'dei achiza. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that if it's more than k'dei achiza, it's tar. But why would it be tar? According to Reish Lakish, leather is so strong that the leather should be considered to be strong even after that shear of k'dei achiza, and it's never going to tear. So lema cholim. And you see that apparently the Mishnah doesn't hold that that makes it considered to be a yad. Ah, come on. What does that have to do with the conversation we're having? The Mishnah is talking about the level of connection between the skin and the meat that the skin is being pulled off of. And what does that have to do with the leather being strong, for heaven's sakes? It has to do with the chibor between the leather and the meat. It has nothing to do with the chibor of the leather to itself. So that's because, says Rabbi Yoffin, that Rishon Osenipul. Every bit that you pull off just falls to the side now and is not the thing that you're going to be using. What's your problem? Did anybody say it's not strong? It's not connected. What, are you going to re-sew the leather to the skin? Come on. We're talking about reconstituting the leather jacket, not the connection of leather to meat. I understand your question. Masif Rav Yosef, okay, but how about the part of our Mishnah that talks about the skin around the neck, okay? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, well, that's not considered to be a chibur. Why am I? I mean, look, it hasn't been taken off yet, and it's going to be strong until it is. So why isn't it considered to be attached? Okay, listen, I could play with you on this and argue with you, but there's no point in arguing. It's a ridiculous thing that you're saying. That shita was only true according to who? To Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Okay, so why can't you read? Amos Eifa, look at the rest of the Chachamim Omrim, it is a chibur. What are you going to ask me, Akasha, on Reish Lakish, from Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, when the Mishnah itself has the Das of the Chachamim that say that it is considered to be a chibur, and I'm going to have to argue with you about whether it's something that can be falling off has anything to do with leather being strong? Instead of asking Akasha on him from Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, bring a riot to him from the Chachamim. And I say, says Abaye, it even works out according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, because the machlokas Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the Chachamim, has zero implication for whether leather is strong. The point of that machlokas is something entirely different. Want me to explain it to you? The leather around the neck, obviously, you can't use it to pull on anything. It just pulls off. But the question is, does it act as a shomer? Now, sorry. There's lots of meat on that neck. That meat is protected by the skin around the neck. So there's no question that that skin is keeping an eye, so to speak, as a shomer on the meat underneath. Keep your grubby paws off of me, says the skin around the neck. Okay, so then it's a good shomer. The only problem is, what kind of shomer is it who takes coffee breaks every 10 minutes? Huh? You're going to get this guy to be a shomer on your building? No way. Well, this or around the neck has a tendency to fall off unexpectedly. Now, you call that a shomer? At any minute, he may just disappear. That's the machlokas. Is a shomer, surely not take me a love, a shomer that's going to just fall off on its own without any kind of particular catalyst, is that called a shomer? That's the machlokas. B'shomer ha'asurla not take me a love kamifuge. Mar Sava the Chachamim say, look, as long as it's over this meat on the neck, it's protecting the meat from grubby paws. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, but that's not called a shomer. A shomer is something that provides long-term protection. And that is not called a shomer by definition. But, I mean, I have nothing against Reish Lakish about the idea of or being cholim. We're not even talking about or being cholim. The or around the neck, cholim to what? I don't even know what you're talking about. The kasha made no sense. Masiv Rabbi Yirmiya. Okay. Once we're already in Kalim, we might as well go the whole way and ask another Mishnah from Kalim. And this was the Mishnah about an oven. So remember how the oven is constructed in those days. So you make a cheres container, and this cheres is open on both ends. It's totally open on its bottom, and it has no base. And it comes up to a smaller opening on top. Now, what do? You put it down on the ground, and you plaster it. And you plaster it again. Nice, thick plaster that serves two purposes. First of all, it attaches it to the ground so that heat doesn't leak out from underneath. Secondly, it provides tremendous insulation so that the heat is held inside of your tanur. And here you go. And actually, data indicates that this is 90% cheaper than anything made by Siemens. And therefore, it was a great way to make tanurim. Now, suppose it's got one big problem, and that is, you can always throw a Siemens oven into the mikveh if you're stupid, but it won't help to throw one of these things into the mikveh if it becomes tameh. Why? Because it's cheres, and cheres does not have to hire a b'mikveh. So the only way you can make this tanur tahar is by breaking it. So now, we've got this same problem of Reish Lakish in breaking a tanur, because, I mean, if you think leather jackets are tough, let me talk to you about the thick insulating coating of plaster. That's a lot tougher than a leather jacket. So that's why I want to ask Reish Lakish about the practicalities of being metayer a tanur. Now look what it says that you can do. You split the inside part, which is the cheres part. So you split it into at least three parts, because if you split it only into two parts, one of those two parts is going to have a rove and it will retain its tumah. Right? So you have to make sure the whole thing is tar. The only way to make sure the whole thing is tar is by splitting it into three parts. And it's been proven that once something is split into three parts, so then, assuming that there are more or less equal parts, there's no rove in one part. Okay. Then that's not enough. You have to go to the other side of the oven and you have to scrape off all of that plaster until you get to the part that's actually all the way on the ground. That is what connected it to the ground. So basically, you got to tear this thing to pieces. So says the Tanakhama. Rabbi Meir says, no. Ain't no tzarich. Well, don't exaggerate. If you broke it up into three parts, you don't need to cut off any of the plaster. You certainly don't need to take off every last bit. All you need to do is to make sure that there's no single piece that is four tefachim, which is the minimal shiur of Kabbalah's Tumah for this oven. So make sure that there's no piece inside that has four tefachim. What this means, four tefachim, is all machlokas over there. We're talking about width, height, but the point is, reduce it from the shiur of Kabbalah's Tumah for the tanur, and then that's fine. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, what does that mean, Reish Lakish? Come and fess up. The moment that you make it less than four tvachim, even though it's being held together by that nice thick plaster on the other side, it loses its tuma. And you're trying to tell me that a leather jacket, because it's being held by the leather, that's enough to keep it retaining its tuma? Am I? Certainly the plaster is better than the leather. So lema hocholim v'koy? How come in this case we don't say that the plaster is strong enough to maintain the chibur and prevent it from becoming tahor? So Resh Lakish, you see that that doesn't make any difference. Amar Rava, so Rava said to Rabbi Yirmiyah, but why are you asking on Resh Lakish from Rabbi Meir? If the Rabbanan, they say you do have to scrape off. Why do they say you have to scrape off every last bit of plaster? Because of Resh Lakish. So if anything, you have a riot to Resh Lakish over here. So Ema Midrabbanan, Gorera Tatvela, Ajie Ba'aretz. Why do you think they said you've got to take off every last bit of plaster? Okay, so instead of asking on Resh Lakish from Rabbi Meir, what you should say is, here's a riot to Resh Lakish from the Rabbanan. Ela, Omar Rava, I want to tell you that there's nothing here that is problematic as far as I see, even from Rabbi Meir to Resh Lakish. And if anything, this Mishnah is a great, same kind of idea as Resh Lakish. Archi Ka'amar, what the Mishnah is trying to tell you is, Tanur Shinitma, Kitzad Metarinota. So first of all, everybody, the Rabbanan, Rabbi Meir, everybody agrees you have to break it into at least three parts from the inside. And you have to be gorer at the tefillah from the outside. Achie ba'aretz. There's no question. Rabbi Meir agrees he wasn't talking about taking off the plaster. Because, of course, you have to take off the plaster. We all agree that Resh Lakish, the idea of Resh Lakish, is that if something is holding other pieces together, then it doesn't lose its shame of a kli. The point over here is that it's missing these words. What do you do to make sure that your tanur made out of cheres can never become tamei in the first place? Kate said, who will say? So over there, the Chachamim say, well, it's got to be, let's say you want to move it from one place to another, you're afraid that the movers are going to be metamei it. You're going to have to do the same thing. You're going to actually need to lose its shame clean. And that means you're going to, again, have to be chokol shlosha, and then you could be gorera tatvela chei baretz. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, there's a big difference between making the oven not a kli in the first place, because it's not viewed as a completed kli. And remember, for something to be mekabel tuma, it has to be fully completed. For something to lose its tuma, it has to be completely ruined. So if you're talking about preventing the tumah in the first place, you don't have to dismantle this the way the Chachomim are claiming until you go all the way down into the ground. It's enough that it's no longer considered to be a fully functional oven if it's been cracked in these two places to make it three separate pieces. And at that point, it's not going to be mekabel tuma, although I agree it is not going to become tor if it was tameh. So basically, Rabbi Meir would even agree with Resh Lakish. If it's already tameh, so then we are worried about the fact that the plaster is the equivalent of the leather jacket. Okay, Rabosai, so now you understand the next time you see a tanur riding a motorcycle, it's clearly going according to the shita of Resh Lakish. And so with that, we end the very exciting inyanim that we had today, the extensions of yad to a secondary material, which would be the yad to the skin that you're pulling off, and whether that could also serve as a yad to the basar, so that according to Rav, it would not serve. According to Rav Asi, it would. And then we had the various practical ways. The next time that you're skinning a cow and you want to turn it into a proper leather flask, now remember, there's books about this, like The Knowledge. What happens when everything is forgotten and the world is in a state of post-nuclear holocaust? How would you store your water? This Gemara is suddenly very valuable. You need to learn how to be margil, and therefore you get yourself a water bottle. And so on. Okay, so we learned those dinim, we learned what the shiurim are in them, and we also learned about fascinating machlokas in Legabe Shomer, especially this new idea, whether a shomer has to be actually reliable to be a shomer on Ochman. We also touched upon the din of, which we had before actually, that there's a gezerah, according to Avuah d'Shmuel, a gezerah of a behemah treifa, that it would be metame if we're talking about mugdashim. Remember, we've got a number of gezerahs like that that affect things that are usur in the Beis HaMikdash and noser and so on. So, all to be Bezrat Hashem continued tomorrow, if the good Lord spares us, and we have yet another wonderful day of Daf Yomi together. Okay, Rabbosai, looking forward and hoping to see you soon. Kol Tov and Besorah Tovot.